This week on the Lectures in History podcast, a lecture about comics in Cold War America. Gregory Dattis of San Diego State University analyzes the portrayal of war comics and how they were reflective of Cold War fears and insecurities.
4 years later, look at this poster. Hedda Hopper says it'll scare the pants off you. There's women falling out of the skies. That's how bad it is. New York City is going to topple. San Francisco is in flames. Boulder Dam is destroyed. Nowhere is it safe in the United States. Puget Sound attacked with a nuclear strike. Mass casualties. This is frightening.
Professor Dattis also analyzes the portrayal of the war in those comics. San Diego State University in California is home to the Center for Comic Studies.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome. We are on lesson 7, so we're making good progress. Today we're going to get into the Red Scare. Last lesson, obviously, we talked a little bit about the role of comics in kind of building a national identity and what that means. We'll talk about that in a moment. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the Red Scare and how the comics were contributing to that Red Scare and also reflecting it. What I want to do today, as you see here, is kind of we'll start with this kind of red menace and what it means and how it is supposedly a threat to definitions of American freedom and liberty. We're going to have a conversation on the think piece you did today by kind of examining is this tomorrow and getting a sense of whether this threat is internal or external and what was the most dangerous threat. And then we're going to take a little bit of a dive into some of the espionage comics and see how the Cold War is unfolding in the realm of James Bond and the spies. Next lesson, we're going to move over to taking a look at how children are expected to participate in the Cold War. So we'll have a reading from Kelly's Davis, and then you're going to actually look at these Bowman trading cards that came out in 1951, which are just phenomenal. They're basically baseball trading cards that were all about the Red Scare and targeted to kids. All right, so that's where we're heading today. Quick review from last lesson. We talked about comic books as an influencer and a reflection of national identity and how these comics, not just Cold War comics, but I think comics more generally, are reflective of cultural trends and receptive to cultural trends. So we see there's kind of a symbiotic relationship between culture and comics. They're reflecting culture, but they're also contributing to what that culture means. And we saw last lesson that obviously when we get into the Cold War, there are pretty serious concerns over national identity. What does it mean to be an American in the post-World War II era? What does it mean to be an American as you're now fighting yet another global threat, no longer now from Nazis, although we'll see Nazis continue to pop up. The Red Skull is just one example throughout the Cold War era. But this threat from seemingly a new totalitarian one with global communism. And so we asked as we kind of, remember we looked at the first introduction or the introduction of The Incredible Hulk and that first cover with Stan Lee, and whether these Marvel comics were reflective of American confidence coming out of World War II or American fears. And we had this conversation, we seemed to come to some consensus that it was both, right? That Marvel Comics, as just one example, are reflecting both a confidence in and fear of the Cold War and America's relationship with the Cold War. We talked about some of the tensions between identity and how it's constructed, a larger national identity, and is it a consensus-based identity, almost a coercive, forced identity of what you are supposed to be as an American, what you were supposed to do as an American. And then these fracture lines between this kind of larger consensus national identity in the Cold War and personal identity. Race, gender are all impacted by these fracture lines of what it means to be an American fighting the Cold War and what it might mean to be an African American participating in the Civil Rights Movement. And as we saw, remember that one panel we saw where the NAACP is helping out an African American family in need, and the comic suggested that because the NAACP was doing that and because they were ostensibly influenced by communism, that the NAACP was suspect. And so clearly there's some issues here and tensions between how we're thinking about identity. We also talked a little bit about this important idea of consensus and what it means during this era, right? That for me to be an American, I just did this and just tap so you. For me to be an American, I have to prove that I'm not a communist. And so part of identity is also not explaining what I am, but explaining what I'm not. And the comics will help us do that. But the myth of consensus is based on another kind of deeper myth that we talked about, that Americans have this progressive mission to civilize, that these ideas of manifest destiny, if you will, that have been with us for decades and decades, are still being reflected in the Cold War through comics. And thus, not surprisingly, national identity becomes politicized. And the comics will help readers, as we're going to see today especially, politicize those ideas of what it means to be an American. And then finally, we kind of delved a little bit into the Marvel superheroes with the introduction of characters like the Fantastic Four and the Incredible Hulk and Peter Parker. And yes, with great power comes. Yeah, sorry, right? Got it at least once, right? So if you're talking about war, at least once you got to mention Clausewitz. If you're talking to comics, at least once you have to mention with great power.
It's in the contract.
And so how these comic book heroes themselves are embodying this nationalist, these nationalist aspirations and also this triumphalist culture, right? That the Fantastic Four are aspirational in what they represent, but there's also, as we saw, some concerns here, right? That Ben Grimm, as an example, is kind of a reluctant hero. Clearly, the Incredible Hulk is a reluctant hero. And yet the culture that's coming out of these Cold War comics is triumphalist. They express a moral certainty. Now, we're going to see as we get a little farther into the course that crime and horror comics are definitely not doing that. And that's why they're going to be a target, because they're offering, suggesting a narrative that is not triumphalist and that there may be some decay within this American narrative, within American culture. And that's why folks like Frederick Wortham are going to attack them, besides the point that they're supposedly contributing to juvenile delinquency. But what's important for us, especially with the Marvel comics, and we'll hit them again as we hit a little bit later on down in the course, that they're actually fighting the Cold War. I remember we saw that one panel where Sue Storm, the origin story of Fantastic Four, she's basically calling Ben Grimm a coward, and then saying, look, if we don't go to space, the communists are going to get there before we do. And so we have to. And then he gets all mad and, you know, throws down and says, I'm going to fly wherever. But they're representing values and virtues. And we had this conversation of who is more representing these values, especially in the early Cold War. Is it Tony Stark as Iron Man or Steve Rogers as Captain America? We have capitalism on one side, the strong, independent industrialists. And on the other side, we have this clearly virtuous ideological character with Steve Rogers. And then the last thing is our review for today. We saw last lesson and had a conversation about core values and who decides those core values. Who decides, who determines what it means to be an American? And how do the comics contribute to this question? And for the superheroes who are supposed to be demonstrating, exhibiting these aspirations and values, they're doing so in a way that also transcends the law. And so we had this conversation, right, of how do you represent a society's values if you're transcending its laws?
These are vigilantes, aren't they? This is what the Civil War comic and then the more recent MCU movie is all about, right? Who represents the society if you're not operating within its laws? And with all of this, obviously, is a conversation which leads us to today about where, from where the major threats come and how we define ourselves and how much of national identity is determined by the threats to that society. Which leads us to the Red Scare. Okay? All right. Any questions at all from our review from last class? Everybody good? Everybody understand what we did in terms of kind of setting this foundation, having a conversation about national identity, how comics are contributing to, reflecting to that conversation about national identity, and ultimately this conversation we had last lesson about how threats are part of that conversation. All right, everybody good? All right, we're off to the races. Everybody good here? All right, my favorite line from last night's reading, right? Peter Lee says, after 1945, these commies, evil, godless commies, are looming large because the nation was sweat-drenched in fear. What a great line. Now, it seems to be that there's proof of this, right? And Lee suggests, if we look at some of the evidence, that this is true. 1946, the Clifford Report, Clark Clifford is an advisor to the Truman administration, co-authors a report called America's Relations with the Soviet Union, and he declares the ultimate aim of Soviet policy is world domination. It's in 1946, only 1 year after we single-handedly won World War II. 2 years after that, 1948, a congressional testimony talking about Soviet espionage inside the United States. A systematic and substantial assault on the integrity of our government. 4 years later, look at this poster. Hedda Hopper says it'll scare the pants off you. There's women falling out of the skies. That's how bad it is. New York City is going to topple. San Francisco is in flames. Boulder Dam is destroyed. Nowhere is it safe in the United States. Puget Sound attacked with a nuclear strike. Mass casualties. This is frightening. And it seems to be that, yes, the cities are under assault, and apparently people falling out of buildings, but so too are fundamental values. And this is the first question I want to kind of work on today, is Lee suggests that fundamental values were at stake. And when you read a comic like this from 1948, The Plot to Steal the World, we've seen this before, right? Remember the little Stalin octopus? In that case, it was red. But here you can see Lenin. It's 1917. He's talking about the revolution in Russia destroying all the liberties of the people. But that's not enough. Now we have to kind of create this communist world. And he's now, luckily, I guess the comic book writer and artist were there to hear the plot to destroy the world, is going to steal not just the Russian state and its people, but the world. All right, so how accurate was this? We discussed the components a couple of lessons now about Marxism and Leninism and what it meant and what it aspired to be. And we talked after World War II the capacity of Stalin's Soviet Union to actually project power, which may have been fairly limited given 22 plus million people, Russians, dead during and in the immediate aftermath of World War II. So were America's fundamental values really at stake here? Given what we've read in McMahon as an overview, given what you've seen here so far, what you read in Is This Tomorrow, do you get a sense that America's fundamental values, who we are, our structures, our government, were really fundamentally at stake here? Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree that they're fundamentals were at stake. Like, it's evidence, like, you see stuff like rock and roll popping into the picture, and there's this whole different, like, dynamic going in the world, but I just think that's, like, progression. But I think that's also a good way for, like, a conservative half of America to try and slow that progression down by finding some sort of like boogeyman to blame, and in this case it was communism.
Okay, so this is an opportunity, and narratives like this is an opportunity for more conservative citizens to say, look, we need to slow all this down. Elvis has taken us in a direction that we don't want to go, and the commies want that, right? Yeah. Denise?
I was going to say that one of the values would be to vote, and like on the Think piece, the Is This Tomorrow? America? Yeah. They were saying that the communists would remove the vote, but they really value it, so they said to use the right to vote.
Yeah, so this is yet another example, right, of something that is clearly at stake, at least according to the comics, right? That if communists take over American government, they're going to take away your right to vote. So exercise that right. And also, right, what's the best way for you to demonstrate that you're not a communist? Go out and vote, right? Yeah.
I think that the threat was real.
Yeah.
But I think that not like the Soviet Union was like one single homogenous state, or it was
right,
even
right.
Like Mao's China, even, you know, especially as the time went on in the 70s, there were more radical people within the apparatus of the Soviet Union who did want, we need to get the world revolution going.
Right.
We can't let, if we stay within the borders, it will die, it will sterilize.
Right.
It has to get out there.
And we had this conversation, right, about the competition between the Soviet Union and China over who is going to be the leader of this global
revolution.
Yeah, exactly.
And should it be anti-communist or anti-imperialist?
Yeah. Anybody else? Luke and then Diana?
Yeah, I think there's an element into which it might be justified, but I think it also in a large part it's a pretty convenient scapegoat. Like,
yeah,
if you look
yeah.
at Is This Tomorrow, a lot of the criticisms were of mostly American institutions like unions.
Right.
Unions were basically propped up in the comic as like basically communist stooges ready to act basically on the orders of Moscow. And
yeah,
without.
Yeah, yeah.
Without really any reasons of their own for doing so, there's a point where people are like, what are they striking over? And they're like, oh, we don't know.
Right.
It's in the comic, it's just because they've been ordered to by the Communist Party. But
yeah, and that's what I wonder about, right? That I think we can come to some consensus that maybe a cultural value that we all share as Americans, if we even believe that is a viable argument, is that I think you can say there's a fairly independent strain in at least how we talk about what it means to be an American. And yet these union folks, at least in the comics, they all kind of shrug their shoulders and like, yeah, we were told to do this by the communists, so we're just going to follow along. And that's what puts this into question, right? Are Americans that easily duped?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
To believe that communism is the absolute right way to go after 150 years of just democratic institutions, and was it going to turn that quickly, especially after World War II, right? Dan?
Yeah, I think they're looking for someone to direct or to make an other of, almost like
yeah,
the
yeah.
Germans did just before the World War II.
Right.
They're looking for a way to unify the people and for the American people so that they'll give them their support when they go to all these wars and to
right.
into Vietnam, into Korea, and, you know.
Yeah, is this also a way then for the government to get support for whatever program you want to promote, especially national security, right? If there is a clear and present danger here, not to steal from Tom Clancy, but if there is a clear and present danger here, I have to get you all to accept it, because then it's easy then for you to support the Truman, to support increases in defense budget, to support interventionism overseas, right? Grace?
That's like exactly what I was going to say.
Sorry.
think that it's fine.
It's fine.
I think that, I'm not sure if the threat was real, but I think to a certain degree they thought it was.
Right.
Enough
right.
for those like key intrinsic American values like religion. And even in Is This Tomorrow, like guns were discussed.
Right, right.
Like education, motherhood, all those things being at risk for communism.
Yeah, this raises a really important point, right? Is it just as important to believe there is a threat as there is an actual threat there? And what I find fascinating with this is we're trying to separate here, or young readers are trying to separate fact from fiction. And how do you do that? This is pretty clear, right? That obviously the Red Communist, the embodiment of the devil. And now you're expecting a young reader to separate fact from fiction. And it's really difficult to do. If you think about a nuclear Soviet Union and the quote-unquote loss of China, Hungary, Berlin, Korea, how do you do that, right? And so I think Grace is right. If you believe in the perception of a threat, is that just as important as the threat itself? I think so. And yeah, catching.
I was saying, it seemed interesting to me that some things that were in the comic also seemed to be things that Americans were doing and kind of projecting. Like on one page, they talked about how, oh, if the commies take over, we're going to burn more food so that like only commies get food. When we know today, a lot of farmers do that, so they keep the prices of like crops up.
Right, right, right.
So. Seems like it's projecting a bit.
Yeah, I think so. And we talked, right, and we'll see, especially with the espionage, right, that both Savage and Lee kind of make this argument that these covert operators, emissaries of the United States across the globe, are simply promoting the Truman Doctrine. But as we suggested last lesson, if you flip that on its head, isn't that what Khrushchev is arguing by supporting wars of national liberation? I think so. So I think there is something to this argument that there's a bit of projection and mirror imaging going on here in terms of the threat, which isn't surprising if you think about, as we started with McMahon, this idea that it is a global competition for leadership of the world and what ideology is going to best serve that. Yeah, cool.
That's a really interesting point, and I think that's pretty clear throughout the entire comic with like just American hypocriticalism, where they're talking about like, oh, communists are gonna bring concentration camps, but it's like we already had internment camps a year prior, so like a little confused about that.
Yeah, the hypocrisy is definitely there.
Yeah,
right?
And then they also talk about how they're gonna, you know, bring on like anti-Semitic sentiments, and it's like, well, Jews were persecuted since the start of America. Like,
right,
they've
right,
always
right.
been persecuted here, you know? It's not like the communists are the specific reason why this is happening. It's
right.
like, it's just been here.
Yeah, I think is it an opportunity to use this threat, this face of evil, as a way to promote your policy, right? Carlos? What's that?
So, coming from the fact that we just got out of World War II, lost that our near peer adversary, which was Japan,
right.
and the Axis powers at the time. Like, communism was like the biggest, even like what you would consider a near peer adversary at that point to challenge our institution. Like, they challenge our institutional values.
Right, right.
So that, like, even in the comic, it showed like a slippery slope, like argument to kind of push those things. Are like, if we let protests start happening, if we let these things start happening, that then eventually we're gonna buckle under that pressure, even if that threat, it's not necessarily there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Satchel?
On the topic of hypocrisy, found in, like, Is This Tomorrow, the commandments at the end that they put forward,
right, right, right.
And the things they said were very, like, they're like, you need to be critical, you need to read things, you need to think, you need to be tolerant. But the whole comic is them just demonizing and generalizing communism as this evil, evil thing. But they tell people to be critical and think for themselves,
right.
yet they're kind of implanting this idea into people's heads.
And I want you to embrace your individualism, and I want you to be able to choose your religion, choose your political identity, but just do so in a way that makes sure you're choosing the right thing, right? Yeah. Denise, and then Christian.
It was interesting how on the commitments, like he said, that one of them was to be tolerant of other races, religions, and nationalities,
right,
and to use your right to vote, but they had been intolerant of African Americans, and they had removed their right to vote and stuff like that, even though it had ended by then, like the grandfather clause and things like that.
Yeah, we're still kind of working through some Jim Crow laws,
exactly,
obviously.
Yeah. They still, you know, the groups of people were still marginalized and couldn't exercise their right to vote when they were in the U.S., so
yeah,
it kind of reflected, you know, the lynching and everything and the starvation, they were all putting African Americans through that. But now that it happened to white people, it was suddenly dangerous and cruel.
Yeah, so I think this is important for us, right? We're seeing the construction of a threat that rests on some pretty basic hypocrisies, right? And again, if you're thinking about, as we did early on, who's the main audience for this? You're asking young kids a lot here to kind of work through what's real, what's fact, what's fiction. Christian, then Garrett.
I think the calls for hypocrisy are a little bit overblown.
Okay.
Considering, you know, like when the Soviets did a camp, they killed 50,000 people in it,
right,
at gunpoint. You know, like I remember there was a movie in the early 90s. It was a submarine movie, and there's a part where they're on the boat. It has Harrison Ford, I think, another actor, and they watch propaganda films about, you know, blacks in America
getting beat.
And you know, look at this. They talk about all. Look at the hypocrisy. It's a very standard line from the Soviet, you know, in terms of game plan to call the other person a hypocrite.
Absolutely.
And to distort the truths and the facts extensively, because the Soviets did use ethnic and racial disparities. The communists did do that. That was a huge part of doing that in any era. Divide and conquer,
right,
is a standard deal and make them all.
And so again, I think what you're saying here, I forget who said it, but you're seeing a mirror imaging here on both sides. Both sides using this almost the exact same tactics, right? Divide. Exterminate religion, or, you know, whatever that, however you just decide to define that.
What is America doing at all,
Well, I think a matter of scale, right? That if you're interning Japanese Americans solely based on race and solely based on fear,
that was awful. That was
absolutely
awful.
Yeah, is it a level of scale difference? I think you might be able to make an argument of that. But I think what's key here is what the comics are suggesting is that our values, our ideals are supreme, and yet we're also engaging in behavior that is kind of suspect and not living up to those ideals that you're seeing in comics like this, right? Garrett?
On like the topic of like divide, in the first couple pages of Is This Tomorrow, is saying that with all the communists that were like in New York, saying that like they've done a very good job of making like different classes and religion like hate each other.
Right.
Like, seems like the communists, if it wasn't for communists, then we wouldn't have classes hating each other, everything would be peaceful. But it's like, even though they may or may not have been communists that were doing that, like, all this turmoil is still going on in America. They're trying to push all America's problems on communism.
So there's coercive consensus building here, right? If you speak out against class inequality, well, you're clearly being... you're clearly exhibiting communist behavior, right? If you're speaking out about issues with civil rights, clearly you've been infiltrated by the communists, right? And so there is this kind of coerciveness to the storyline here, which I think is important as we're working through how do we define identity and how do we build consensus so we are unified against this global threat. And because there is a global threat, we need to involve heroes. And so that's why this medium for us works really well. By us, I mean, you know, young readers in the 1950s. That if you are having a bit of a trouble as a young reader separating fact from fiction, what is absolutely enticing is that this is a global struggle against a godless, evil threat, and we need heroes to help us out. Yeah.
Tomorrow is, and at the end, that final page before the Ten Commandments, it's definitely making it seem like it's enabling the reader to like be that hero by like step up, take your place, like defend your country, and like then we can prevent this slippery slope. Like if you never like fall into the fear of communism, like, or still fear it, but like if you never give into it, then like we won't go down that path.
You can be the mighty Thor's sidekick in this fight against global communism. Yeah, it asks you to participate. And that's one of the things, that's what we're really going to dive into next lesson, is the implications of asking kids, young kids, to participate in war. I mean, this is another question I think we need to ask ourselves. Is the United States at war right now? And by now, I mean, you know, let's say 1948, 49. Yes, by the time it gets to 1950, we're in Korea. But is the United States at war? And if we're kind of asking kids to be a part of this, like Julia said, to participate in this conflict, which has global ramifications. Yes, it's appealing from a marketing standpoint, and publishers obviously want to sell comic books, but it also, I get to have a cape. This is awesome, right, Sean?
I think, yes, we are indeed at war, but it's more of like a cultural war, in essence. I mean, the comic books literally paint, like, communism as the antithesis to Western values and Western society, especially in that religious aspect. I mean, there's a line where, like, I think one of the subversives literally says, here goes the greatest, like, what, trash ever written, the Bible, and then
chucks it into
a big ball of flame. It's so to the point and blunt, it's almost comical, but at the time, it really brings home the fact that we're fighting literally the antithesis.
And notice the language here. And again, you know, remember when we talked about, we read Earl's piece on the importance of you as a reader participating in comics, of filling in those gaps, that when you move from panel to panel, the artist and the writer are asking you to participate when you turn the page. When we looked at Krigstein's Master Race, right? When we're on this tier of the panels and we're in the present, and then now all of a sudden he's asking you to participate as we go down to the bottom tier, and now you're in the past. He's doing, in this case here, right, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby are doing the same exact thing. They're now taking you into, in this case, the Peking, Beijing headquarters, and you get to spy in on this communist, who are saying that communism is the mightiest force in the world. And as long as we destroy the hero protector Thor, we have an opportunity here to shake Americans' morale, or the Western powers' morale. And so even with that kind of language and this imagery, I mean, clearly you're seeing, just look at the face structure here, right? These are savage, animalistic enemies that we're dealing with. It does draw you in to participate in this struggle war. Satchel.
On Sean's point of communism being seen as like the antithesis to Western society, I would even say they paint it as the antithesis to good. Like it's just plain evil. Like it's not even that it's compared to Western society, it's just compared to heroes.
It doesn't get any more. I mean, there's not a lot of room for interpretation here, is there? This is communism. Is it a little good?
According to that, no.
Absolutely not, right? So I think it is important for us to kind of think about, as we're entertaining these questions about American identity during the Cold War era, asking young kids to participate in this. This is pretty threatening. If it's possible that the mighty Thor can be taken down by communists, then maybe he needs all the help he can get. Which is why then Jane Foster, no, I'm kidding. All right. There's another question I think we also need to ask here. And we saw this in the reading, an intimation, a suggestion of this, right? That there may in fact be political benefits to being at war. Now this is a much earlier comic, right? September 1940. So we still have not entered, the United States has still not entered World War II. What do you see here that might suggest that there are political benefits to war?
I mean, if it's an action adventure in the Philippines, then sacking the Philippines means you got a pretty good eye on potential allies like China, and you get all the benefits of, like, materials, so then your party gets more favorable stuff because you were the one that did it.
And Philippines is, yes, kind of part of the American Empire here. Yeah. And so there's that component of it. So this is suggesting that by being at war, you can also
gain a little land places.
Perhaps, right? Land?
Huge economic value to being at war.
There's an economic value to being at war.
Yeah, you've got all the contracts for the military. You end up with land, which gives you more free markets. It just goes on and on.
And we talked about the very present concerns in the immediate post-World War II era, that it was World War II that took us out of the Depression rather than FDR's policies, right? And so among political circles, a very prevalent concern that once we got into a post-World War II peacetime era, we were going to immediately drop back into an economic crisis and back into the Depression. Julie, did you have something? And then Dave?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the reading, I think they, like, straight up say, like, the time to, like, make these changes is, like, when you're in crisis, because the people are looking for stability. They might be open to looking for something new. And so that's a definite political advantage if, like, the people that you're trying to persuade are in crisis. Then
right.
You have an advantage over that, yeah.
Absolutely. Do you get to demonstrate your powerful benevolence?
Yeah, you get to make up your solution.
And you get to make up your own solution. Good. Dave?
So, to answer the question, like, what would benefit the United States of being involved in World War II at that point in 1940, you know, France is occupied, and the United States, like, would be seen as, like, the heroes that, like, came in and, like, helped liberate Western Europe.
Is there a potential for a hero narrative here? Look at his thighs. This guy is doing squats, right? But there's also something really scary here too, right? This kid's a baby and he's on a Gatling gun, for God's sakes. Sean?
I do think it's very important to notice, like, how Uncle Sam is depicted, especially in regards to war.
I mean, like, historically, how Uncle Sam is depicted is the nature of the nation at that point in time. And if he's in war right now, like you said, he's looking pretty strong. He's happy. He's literally beating people up, and he's, like, larger than life.
Right.
So that's to say that America in a war is strong, united, healthy, and just in its element.
Yeah, absolutely. So do your squats if you want to defeat communism. But there's a problem here, right, that in this case, the enemy is visible. When we get to the Cold War, we're not so certain, are we? And so I think a key question we have to ask ourselves is, as you were going through the reading, then especially when you got into Is This Tomorrow, was the communist threat more internal or external? So what do we see here first? So this is obviously a caricature, 1961, of Nikita Khrushchev. What is this godless communism suggesting here in terms of what we're seeing in the comic? What are some of the things you want to pull out of this? Luke, and then Matt.
I think it's highlighting kind of like a two-faced nature of communism, where in all of these cases, Khrushchev's either extending money or the olive branch
right
on one side, but he's holding a missile and a whip in his other hand. And so I think it's trying to express that regardless of what the face of communism is that it's presenting, they're making an argument that its true nature is destructive and subversive and dangerous. And that
deceitful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Matt?
I agree with Luke. But I liked what it said at the bottom, where it's like, in its wake, communism has left a trail of murders, lies, and misery, a kind never seen before. And it's just like, It also says, like, and I saw this as a common trend amongst, like, there was another source earlier that was published by the same Catholic group that published the
Catechetical Guild, right?
Yeah, the I can't say it, but
it's
catechism
and then catechism. It is
hard.
Right?
It's like, a weird
say
word.
Say five times fast.
Yeah, but that group and, like, a bunch of other Catholic groups seem to be, like, constantly pushing this on children and, like, really, like, trying to get their heads into this thought process of, like, screw communism.
If you are an atheist, does that mean that you might also be a communist? That's what these comics are suggesting, right? So the way to burnish your credentials as an American is to be religious, to embrace religion, because that's a great way for you to demonstrate tangibly that you're not a communist. Communists don't go to church.
Where's the line? Where is the actual disinformation? Or Khrushchev did do all these things. I mean, the communists, like even with the material that we read last night, I mean, the process by which countries went, it was a similar process. Where is the line so far? Any of the propaganda I've heard? Now, I understand that some of it is hyperbolic or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's hyperbole. There is propaganda. There is a confrontational war going on, like a cosmic one, really, between two polar opposites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good way to put it, right? A cosmic
one. Yeah, you know, it's more than just the material. But that's what happened in the Soviet Union. That's happened in communist China. That's what happened in Uganda
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
Robert Mugabe. It was a prosperous, wealthy country.
Mm-hmm.
And then he assumed power, and it became genocidal, and the country fell apart. I mean, the same thing. He pitted the ethnic groups against each other, be it the black tribes or the mm-hmm. or the whites against the blacks and everything else, or any number of places. I mean, America wasn't that great either. We had the banana republics.
Right.
We cooed people as well. But this is a part of, like, during the era of our class in 1961 or 2, Saul Alinsky wrote his book Rules for Radicals.
So this external threat is real. Okay. Carlos and then Shane?
Well, adding on to that, I think that's where the huge issue comes with the internal threat, like building an internal threat, is because there was a basis for having this fear of communism. They could see, like, there was, like, solid proof, there was anecdotal evidence, and, you know, it could be that bad. And because of that, they saw a small issue that could potentially become a bigger issue, and they decided to try to stop it at the lowest level possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good. Shane, and then Taylor, and then I want to come back to what Christian said.
Two things. One, I did also notice when he's looking towards the east, he's trying to get peace in his own region, and then towards the west, he's trying to blow up and
Very
stuff,
nice.
Be aggressive.
Very nice.
I also found I showed a lot of this to my Russian spouse. They just laugh at so much of this. It's so, like, out of proportion, blown up stuff. I mean, they have the same things. I mean, they called their mom, and they're like, "Oh,
why did you leave behind a trail of misery when you were raising me?"
Pretty much, it's like, they had the same things we did. That's so cool.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a really interesting point of view.
Yeah, it is interesting. Taylor?
To kind of Christian and Carlos's points, right, I think it started definitely as a very valid, like, external threat.
Uh-huh.
But especially when we look at, is this tomorrow, I think we really kind of used some fears that Americans had in order to kind of, like, create an internal threat or make it at least, like, add to the perception that there was an internal threat to democracy in the United States. And I think this is seen especially in Is This Tomorrow through the use of, like, Depression era imagery, Dust Bowl imagery.
Right.
And then also you have, like, comparisons to World War II Nazism, like, even on page 3, I think it was, there's, like, the armband of the communists with, like, the sickle and hammer.
Right.
It fashioned just like the Nazis wore. So I think they purposefully crafted some of that messaging to the audience that grew up in an era full of fear of, like, actual historical events.
Yeah. And that, to me, is the key question, right, is where is the lie is a great question. But for what purpose is this being sold, right?
Is it for true national security purposes, or this is an external threat? Is it now a way for whoever's selling this message to say, well, we need to look at the internal threat because the external threat is now seeping internally? And that's where I wonder how we determine the level of threat. Is this imagery a lie, or is it a problem of degree, right? Because what ends up happening then is this same comic from this communism, or this godless communism. Take a look at here. We're now taking you through an educational description of communist cells. And in this case, we can see the evils of librarians. Because she's at a public library. He's at a university teacher. Thank you, I'm a communist. The labor union. Who talked about labor unions earlier? Here's a labor union librarian who's now in it. And then I have received orders to go to California, and clearly I obey because I'm a communist. So I think the problem here, right, is when we're taking this threat and just putting in this space of just hyper fear and overestimating the threat, what does it do to American culture? Because then there is a coercive consensus building, and it narrows what's acceptable within American culture. Because the external threat seems to be causing an internal threat. Luke?
I was just going to say, they warned in the comic that it's like all it takes is like a small group of communists to take over.
A cell.
Yeah, and the fact that there was a party in a lot of these countries, contributes to the fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Luke and then Diana?
Yeah, I think the issue that's present in this isn't so much that it isn't so much the foreign threat. Regardless of if the sentiment towards what the Russian communists are doing, the Chinese communists are doing is valid or not, it's kind of irrelevant because that isn't really what any of this is talking about. It's talking about kind of this imagined domestic threat that's kind of large. It takes its orders from Moscow, perhaps, but I think it's largely independent from anything that they're doing over there. Instead, if you look at this, there's not really actually that much specifically about communism. It's more like if it's this guy in the third panel here who's saying, oh, you have to leave your wife and family to work for us. It's the destruction of
in
family
California.
Values. Yeah. It's like this is showing, the destruction of family values. And is this tomorrow? It's if the Catholic Church is our last holdout against communism, you need to turn to religion. And
right.
So I think...
And you are on the front lines of this war.
Yeah.
You and your family are active participants in this war. And again, I think what that does is it narrows what's acceptable in terms of participatory democracy. Diana, Nicole?
This is also the same time that they were doing the Senate or the House Un-American...
HUAC, right. Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah.
Right.
With McCarthy and all.
This is a little later. This is 1961. Those hearings are happening in the early 50s. You're still seeing a little bit of leftover of Red Scare McCarthyism, absolutely.
Yeah. I just think it's very funny. This has nothing really to do with this conversation, but I think it's very funny that these comics where they show the communist takeover of America, as he was saying, is it's just a cell of people, right? It's just a small group of people. But then when you read the comics that are Americans defeating communism, it's it only takes two people to defeat
right.
So it's just very funny.
But there's a lot of, I'll get to you in a second, there's a lot of insecurity here too. In this, from 1951, how Stalin hopes we will destroy ourselves, the argument in this comic is an economic one. That if we don't control our own inflation, we're going to economically bankrupt ourselves, and that's going to contribute to us not being able to fight this global crusade. So there's a meshing here of threats, right? That the external one, and in the case of the comics, there's a belief that it's all inspired by Lenin and his followers. Actually, Lenin is probably still alive in most of these comics. but Lenin and Stalin and all that, are puppet masters for the world. And because Americans, some, are not strong enough to stand up against this threat, they're willing to potentially undermine our economy. They're willing to join trade unions and infiltrate and turn folks away from capitalism towards socialism within trade unions. They're willing to turn libraries and places of education into propaganda sites. And there's a lot of insecurity here. And again, I want to keep coming back to this external threat and what's real and perceived and just the capacity, the capability of the Soviet Union to actually project power enough to dominate the globe. Yeah, real quick.
I really think by the end of the 60s, I feel like
so much until the 70s, I feel like the threat became more of an internal threat, because Marxism is an ideology with a very compact, it's got an end times thing like any religion or something, it's got people, scholars, knowledgeable, all that. It does want to get rid of the family, it does want to get rid of the church, it does want to, read the Communist Manifesto, the destruction of the family is... Required.
Yeah, but remember what we talked about, right? There's a difference between ideology and how execution. Ideology is interpreted by followers. And I'll talk about this in a moment because the comics are also going to weigh in on this.
I'm trying to say is that Americans would say, well, why would we want a Communist Party, even if just as an experiment in political freedom, because their end goal is communism.
And that's why, I think you're exactly right, and that's where I think the comics kind of overestimate, because I don't think there were many Americans that were willing to experiment with communism. And so was this really a threat, right? How many librarians across the nation were really willing to participate in communist cells?
Wasn't there always censoring the books now? That they don't get any orders. I mean, it's just this world that they talk to the Kremlin once a year.
Yeah.
They get their sign up. They did send spies.
They did.
I don't watch any archived interviews of spies from the 90s.
Gotcha. I want us to think about the importance of threat inflation here and what that threat inflation, what are the consequences and implications of that threat inflation? Satchel.
I think on that point that at a certain point the hyperbolization of communism becomes something that goes past what the actual threat is, as to reduce the problems that America is facing at home, because this is a point where there's a lot of social tension between class, race. I mean, just there's a lot of problems in America. So there's a point where it's not even that this is a threat, but if we recognize this threat, it'll take people's minds off of the conflicts at home.
And this is a great way to do it, right? Because we're not just fighting godless communists, but look at what they're doing here, according to the communists. Mind-washing, ungodliness, inhumanity, slavery, misery. It's a perfect way to reorient American society. Luke?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to sort of reiterate what I was going for, I don't think it necessarily mattered. I don't think it was necessarily the communism that mattered. I don't think it was necessarily... I think there was obviously a degree to which Americans were concerned about the spread of communism, about the capabilities of Russia, China. I mean, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, it was clear that the threat exists and is real, but I don't think the core of this Red Scare movement really has to do with foreign communism.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with groups that were concerned about what they saw as a decay of American values, mm-hmm. in the family, in religion, in morality, like how in Is This Tomorrow they're criticizing things like Hollywood movies,
right.
In aspects like euthanasia, which was also being criticized as having its basis in communism. I think it's to prop up these values and to try and give them more urgency, that the decay of these values is an urgent issue. I think connecting it to something that's kind of, while it does have parallels, while Marxism and communism do have tenets that include the destruction of family, religion, etc., I think it is largely separate in that it's a convenient, mm-hmm. scapegoat to create a sense of urgency in maintaining these American values.
How you define them, right?
These American, what they perceive as these American values that are on the decline. So I don't necessarily think it matters too much how big the actual Soviet threat was to the people making.
As long as it was being depicted this way, you could then argue for support of, and then pick your.
I think it really could have been anything.
Okay, interesting. Shane?
Besides the fact I think someone's probably really proud to come up with that anagram right there.
Yeah, right?
Like, oh, yeah, that seems like
all right,
someone's
I need a word for you.
Ungodly.
Help me out here. Who's got it?
Ungodliness,
right? Uncleanliness.
Besides that, I think it's interesting when they put the first three, conquest, oppression, murder,
right.
And then we just put that right next to Uncle Sam punching a guy from the Philippines.
Right.
Like, really close together.
Yeah, again, this is such an important point that you were all bringing out today, right? That this mirror imaging, the parallelism, if you will, between Soviet propaganda and what you're seeing in American comic books and how this is kind of playing off each other.
One thing I found interesting about, like, is this tomorrow, when we're talking about, like, the internal threat and if it was kind of hyperbolized and everything like that, was the use of language in the comic, as far as, like, every time there was a panel that talked about a strike or a peaceful protest, the wording was riot.
Right.
And I found that very interesting because, like, that kind of gaslighting language, right, where we're going to basically just say that everything that we disagree with is, you know, some sort of, like, riot.
Communist conspiracy, right?
And it's going to be a violent event. We still see that happen, you know, to this day in the use of language.
Right.
So I think when you add historical imagery, such as, like, the Great Depression, World War II, and then you add, you know, some of that language, like riot, which gives you a very different picture than, like, a protest
or exercising your basic rights in a democracy.
Right. So I think when you add all of those things together, it creates that hyperbole of threat.
Yeah.
Especially to a 1947 reader who lived through events that they would see kind of reflected in those pages.
Totalitarianism and Nazism and militarism, absolutely. And again, think about audiences here. You're asking a young kid to do a lot with the imagery and a lot with the language here. And remember, comics are supposed to be read where you're working text and image together. You're asking a lot for a young reader to... We talked about the importance of social context and getting the joke in comics, right? You're asking a lot for a young kid to do this. Carlos?
I was going to say that, like, when we were talking about, like, how everything was, like, a separate, it was possible scenarios that started off leading to something that was completely extreme.
Right.
However, like, using the verbiage and everything, there was, like, the crowning achievement or culminating victory was when the kid reported his parents.
Right.
Which was kind of like a destruction of, like, all values, because it wasn't just, a destruction of a family. There was a religion in there. There was freedom of information. And
right.
It just kind of, like, pushed to that, like, and it
yeah. Which is, there's an interesting paradox here, right? We're talking about the importance of family, but we're also then showcasing a young child potentially turning in his family because they're communists, right?
The last line.
And there's.
Why didn't you share that what
he was learning
in school?
Right. Yeah, so, and interesting parallels to today in terms of who has responsibility for children's education, right, Shane?
The comic tells us you're allowed to snitch as long as it's the government.
Right, yeah, that's right. Snitches don't get stitches as long as it's an anti-communist message, that's right.
There's also
Does that work? I think it works, right?
There's also this redirecting of attention.
It does.
Had Francis Scary Powell, the spying for America.
The YouTube pilot back in
YouTube.
Right.
We got in Cuba, the way we knew they had the missiles was we had spy planes flying over. So if we're doing it, but we don't, we want to redirect it to, the Soviets are doing it, not us.
Yeah, in terms of, there is a message here,
yeah.
And we saw from the reading last night, right, that an undercurrent message of, it's okay to fight fire with fire here. if they're so immoral that they're doing this, right? That these are good Russian people. They're just being duped by these totalitarian leaders. If they're doing this to their own people, does that loosen our moral responsibilities for how we can act? It's acceptable for us to maybe occasionally step out of what we would deem moral, because there's a greater good to be had here. If we can intervene and save this poor Russian family from these totalitarian Soviet leaders, don't we have a moral obligation to do that? And if we act a little immorally while we're doing that by fighting fire with fire, then that potentially is okay because we are participating in a greater good. Yeah.
I think that kind of ties in with, like, there was another point in the comic that I found a little hypocritical, but obviously at the time they hadn't, like, the concept of it, but they showed the disappearance and murder of someone
right.
that was communist. And
right.
then, like, 40 years later, we go on to support dictators that are going to do the exact same thing to communist people. So it's just interesting how we like take the exact same thing, and then obviously they didn't know at the time that we were going to do this, but like we just kind of take it and we're like, oh well, they need saving. So
that's right, and we're going to see this theme throughout the course, right? That the comics will also tell a very simple message here of good versus evil, and we want to make sure that it's clear. Yeah, real quick, Taylor, and I want to move on to Is This Tomorrow?
On that point, though, I do think that, like the article by Savage kind
yeah.
of talks about the Red Menace.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how, you know, in some of the superhero comics before, it was very clear fight against good versus evil, and the morals were very clear of, like, we're not going to kill the bad guy, we're going to capture him and put him in jail. And,
right, and hopefully
so,
rehabilitate him if they're
right.
not too you know, their minds haven't been too penetrated
but
by
then,
the comics.
But then, like, by the Red Menace article, he talks about how, you know, when you see the shift during kind of the Red Scare and in the comics during this era, you see homicide and genocide being more reasonable and acceptable measures
right.
for these heroes to take.
Right, right, right.
So I think that kind of reflects maybe some of that questioning of those morals and values that we might have had, and how do we now place that in this complicated situation that we have with, like,
for heroes and regular Americans, when you're fighting this, do potentially unsavory means, are potentially unsavory means justified by the ends? And I think they... Go ahead.
Especially with TV showing images of what's happening, for example, in, like, Vietnam. You know, how do we, as Americans, deal with this imagery of war we may have not have had before? And also with, like... morals and concepts of how we're good versus evil in the world.
So this is an important point that we're going to get to as we're a little deeper into the semester of how well are these comics setting young readers up for the nuances, the complexities of a political military war like the American one in Vietnam. I think the short answer right now is probably not all that well. All right, this is the big comic you read for today, Is This Tomorrow? Which now going back, as I was kind of prepping for this, this imagery is kind of frightening in a way that I probably wouldn't have thought frightening, you know, a year or two ago. And I'll leave it at that. All right. How do we answer this question? Was this comic book that you read for today more education or indoctrination? So you're shaking your head like, which no?
I would go with that.
Doctrines. How come?
Because it opens up what I would consider a form of fear-mongering.
Okay.
Which is saying that they're already in your country, they're already in your government.
Right, right.
And you need to take steps to prevent them from doing what...
Further damage.
The rest of the comic shows. If you don't do what the last page says, the Ten Commandments of being a citizen...
Look what's going to happen.
Look what's going to happen.
Yeah, okay, good. Shane, and then Luke.
I also found it interesting because he said this was made by a Catholic group, and throughout the whole comic, they show Catholics
being persecuted,
right.
All sorts of stuff. And then they even give like a commandments at the end, like the Ten Commandments of
Christianity.
Not subtle at all. But I found it interesting on one panel, they said, I think it was like Catholicism promotes individuality or something like that, probably to not be viewed as like a central communist or whatever.
Right.
Although usually it's like, you know, worshiping one God, so they'd be like, oh, we don't want to be like worshiping Stalin or something, so we're just going to say it's everybody's individual. When this seems like there's a lot of bias involved.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's really effective in blurring the lines between education and indoctrination, because it's easy now to look back and say, oh, this stuff didn't happen. Look how hyperbolic this all was. Clearly, this was just blatant indoctrination. How did people not see how ridiculous this seems? But in the moment, when you're at this time, it says, like, in the introduction and in the conclusion of the comic, it's like, these are all things that have happened across the globe to start communist revolutions in other countries. This has all happened before. It's presented very much like education. And if you're a kid reading this, do you really have any means of going and looking at what the truth is? Or are you going to take the word of something that seems to know what it's talking about and is pretty adamant about it?
Or when we get to comics like this, the espionage comics. So I'm going to, that was kind of an unartful segue. But I do want you to think about, as we move through this course, especially with comics like this, where is this blurred line between education and indoctrination, and how does one potentially support the other? Here, what you're seeing, right, is these are ripped out of the pages of the news, right? Especially when we get to, and we saw this a little bit, I think, a lesson or two ago, right, that these secret agents are not mythical. They are, you know, operating in Bulgaria. But, you know, when you look at Bulgaria, when you look at Hungary in 1956, Czechoslovakia in 1968, a little bit later what we're talking about, when you see communists taking over in China, and it's all ripped from the headlines, if you're a young reader, I think you are scared. And when you're seeing this in movies and comics and the news, and you're seeing evidence of a communist takeover or attempted communist takeover in Korea, I think it is pretty scary. And may seem less like indoctrination and more like preparation, education to participate to make sure that this doesn't happen to America.
Don't we see some of that even today? Look how easily people will convince or hear something, especially from the right on the news, all these conspiracy theories and all. Well, it's got to be true. I saw it on the news.
Yeah, you know what we talked about just more broadly about the value of the historical discipline in our very first class, about how do you use information, how do you evaluate information, how do you evaluate sources. And for young readers that are working through these big, potentially apocalyptic issues, for a 10, 15-year-old to work through that as they're reading this amazing story of spy cases, it might be difficult to work through that. Garrett?
I think it could be seen as like both educational and doctrine, and because like the U.S. said like we're the guardians against communism,
right? And so we use a lot of, if we can use a lot of fear to make sure people go against communism, because if America falls, then there goes our guardian against communism, and so the rest of the world will fall.
Yeah, and there's a sense here, right, that we now actually do have a moral obligation to intervene. And that's why I think the espionage comics are so important for us. Because what they're suggesting is, yes, there potentially are traitors and sympathizers here at home, but there's also a fight to be had overseas. And not necessarily a conventional one of armies, but one of spies. And we have a moral obligation to help, right? If we go back to that blood is the harvest, don't we have a responsibility as a superpower, Peter Parker, to help out? Because we have the power to do so. Sean?
I think a good point was just made a minute ago, that comic books, especially espionage comic books, are kind of like the beginning stages of
political commentary and biased opinions infiltrating, like, news in a way. Like, back then, this was almost like, it's not news, of course, but no, it's but a large information
but
source
is this,
at the time.
What's the difference between education and entertainment?
The line is very blurred, especially
really
when
blurred
it comes
here.
To comic books.
Just real quick before we move on, we're going to come back to this, but I also, as I want you to note the gendered component here. Look at the colors here, obviously the red piece of this, and this luscious creature that as she's described in the book. We're going to talk a little bit later in the course about the role of sex and gender in terms of women who are seduced by communism using their bodies as literal weapons of war. So just hang on to that. We're going to come back to this image a little bit later, but I want you to just tag this for right now, and we'll hit it again. And once more, even with these folks that are serving overseas, in Korea, we saw radio operators that turned into traitors, right? We saw folks that are supporting American values overseas. But this spy game is happening here at home as well. Look at the language here, right? This is Rick Davis of the Secret Service. He's uncovering this plot to poison American crops. And Karloff comes here. He works with you American pigs who he hates, but it's all worth it because he's right on the cusp now of unleashing his plan. There's a lot of fear here, a lot of insecurity. And I think Sean's right. We kind of have to work through the blurred lines here of entertainment and propaganda and information and think about how the readers were trying to work through that as well. And obviously, we're not operating alone. We have our allies here in places like Korea. Notice the language here in terms of our agent Kent throttles our North Korean agent and then is told by an appreciative ally that, hey, thanks for giving us democracy. I promise you we're not going to give it up. So there's a sense here, I think, too, of responsibility among our allies, of being appreciative for what Americans are bringing to the table. And that same language applies overseas. You all, pick your place, in this case it's Romania, have to be united against the threat, just like we are at home. And look at the language here. Don't you realize the Reds want people to split us up into factions? Don't make the same mistake. Yes, Hedge.
I find it interesting how dialogue is very, there's no room for any interpretation at all in any, like, it's very interesting that they're just forcing everything they want down people's throats.
Yeah, look at the language here. Let's do this real quick. You're not alone anymore. What's he saying here?
We're here to help.
We're here to help, but this is a global fight that we're all a part of, but we're here to help, so be appreciative. Every freedom-loving person is in this fight. Do you have a choice to participate or not? If you don't participate, what are you saying? That you hate freedom. Don't you realize what the Reds want to do? Come together. Be unified. And anybody that is not unified, that has a voice outside of that established consensus, is a threat. And if you don't, you're actually going to lose to the communists, and that will be bad. All right, this is all frightening, isn't it? This is a really frightening picture of the Red Scare and the potential for what it has to do, not just to Americans, but to the entire freedom-loving citizens of the globe. And so when we had this conversation last lesson about the importance of comics contributing to a conversation about American identity, this has got to be a part of that conversation. It's what we aspire to, but it's also what we're afraid of. And when we get to the next lesson, we're going to see it is so frightful of a threat that we have to get kids involved. Children have to be a part of this fight. They have to be indoctrinated into the message here because they are the future, not only of our national security, but of the entire United States of America, if not the globe. All right, we good? All right. Well done, everybody. We'll see you next lesson.
Thanks for listening to C-SPAN's Lectures in History podcast. If you're interested in hearing more history, check out Season 2 of the Presidential Recordings podcast. The second season focuses on taped conversations between President Richard Nixon on topics ranging from the Watergate scandal to his nominees for the Supreme Court. The Presidential Recordings podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.